Hoopers, welcome to the podcast. This episode, I interviewed Bex Burton at Hoop Camp this year. Oh my God, what an incredible journey she has been on. If you're not inspired by this to do something amazing, you're not listening very well. I just love her. We met, I think, a couple years ago at a different Hoop Camp. And it was one of those, we felt like we knew each other, but I don't know that we had met each other before. And it was one of those things that I just instantly felt like I've known her for years. And I think she said something like, I should know you, or I know you, but it was like this, it was amazing. So even though we don't spend very much time, we don't spend any time together, this time out at Hoop Camp, I just felt like I sat down with an old friend, and she told an incredible story, and it really, had an impact on me, and I'm still processing it, but I think it may have changed my life from the direction that it was going when I sat down with her. So listen to this amazing talk with Bex, and if you don't love her by the end of this, I don't know what's wrong with you. So I'm going to actually do this,
okay.
The old school
sure.
thing. So
yeah, we can get close.
So I am talking to Bex Burton. Is it short for Becky? It's always been Bex, or do you share that?
I do share that. I was born Rebecca, and I grew up as Becky. And right around the end of my college days and beyond, I was working at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And Bex was born for a number of different reasons, and it stuck. I really liked it, and it took, I don't know, my parents still call me Becky.
Yeah, well, parents always will call you.
Yeah, as hard as you try.
I was like, I think we met at Hoop Camp a couple years ago, mm-hmm. but it was one of those, and I remember this because you and I like kind of locked eyes, and it's like, you like, I feel like I should know you.
Mm-hmm.
And we hadn't met, and I felt that way too.
The same way about you.
And it's like, we haven't met. But
right.
It was weird. I just like felt this immediate, like, oh, I know you.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't. So I've had that little the little girl crush, you know, thing. And it's like, I just adore her. I don't really know her. Although I feel like I do. So this is the why I wanted to interview you.
Great.
It's just like, I wanna know what's up.
Aww.
So when, at the time, I think you were living in Brooklyn?
Yep.
So, and then, so why don't you tell me, like, so, obviously your hooping is in this mix somewhere.
Absolutely.
But it's like, it's spitting out at this point. Mm-hmm. But you do hooping, you perform, you do coaching,
mm-hmm.
you do massage.
A little bit.
And you do, like, physical therapy
Pilates-based personal training and
okay.
therapy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have everything online, and it's like, oh, my God.
I do have a lot online.
You have a lot online. So where did it start? I mean, what was the, like, where did you start and then, you know, kind of get into the hooping, and now you're transitioning.
Sure.
You know, but it seems like the hoop still is like this.
The hoop is
this
where
vehicle
my heart
of change.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it started in ballet class when I was 3 years old, and I just fell in love with dancing. I love to dance, and I was not the typical ballerina. I was not the right shape, but I had the right heart. but I danced until I was about 15, and, you know, I started high school and was kind of feeling, you know, the teenage body awkwardness, and I kind of really didn't have the tools to get past my, you know, get out of my own way and continue dancing. So I quit. I danced for 12 years growing up, and I quit when I was about 15. And instead, I took on theater and music and writing and, like, all kinds of other activities in my high school. I ended up being the student council president, you know. And then when it came around to pursuing higher education, my parents, who are very conservative and traditional, talked to me about going into the Navy or studying law, and And I was like, you know, you've supported my creative efforts for this long, and none of this feels aligned or congruent. And, you know, but they're footing the bill. So, you know, we went back and forth quite a bit, and I came around to television production, which is actually what I studied in my undergrad. I got a degree in television production and television radio with a Bachelor of Science in Communications. So I attribute that to a lot of my marketing know-how, a lot of my business sense. Of course, I've done quite a bit of study since. And then, gosh, what happened after that? Well, I finished my degree because I got 3 years in and I was like, well, I guess, you know, even though I don't want to do this. my third year of college, I studied in London and Los Angeles. I had four internships. And by the end of that year, I was like, F this, man. I'm not really interested in being in this industry. But I had 1 year left, so I decided just to continue and finish. And so I did experimental film and experimental video. And I had a radio show that was all electronic, spins and needles. And it was really fun. But then, you know, shortly after I finished school, I wasn't really sure which direction to go. And at one point, I was working in retail. I was working in a bridal shop, and this woman came in, and she wanted to, she was not the typical bride. You know, she came in, and she's like, I'm getting married, but I don't want to wear a wedding dress. And it was fantastic. I was like, you're my kind of person. And we had just a great rapport. We tried on all these gowns, and like she ended up with this fabulous dress. And in that process, I learned that she was an adult ballet instructor. And it really touched me because I had studied ballet in my childhood, and she invited me to her class. And that kind of set the wheels in motion for my adult return to dance. At the time, I think I was 21 or 22. So I had a 7-year hiatus from movement altogether. I had gained a lot of weight. but around that time that I was speaking of just now, I reclaimed my body and my health, and over the course of a year dropped 35 pounds, returned to dance class. And that kind of shifted. Like, it really opened a door for me. I recognized how much I missed dance and how much I missed movement. And so I got a gym membership, and I, you know, I was looking on the group fitness schedule, and I saw a Pilates class, and I was like, oh, what's that? This is all the rage. This is back in the year 2000. And so I was like, I'll try that. And one class I took, I was hooked. I was like, this is amazing. This is what my body craves. This is the way my body wants to move. And I want to do more of this. So that was 2000. And 4 years later, I was feeling an itch to get out of my college town, which is where I stayed for 4 years after graduation. And, you know, I moved to New York City in 2005, kind of by way of San Francisco for 6 months, trying it on, feeling if I wanted to be there. Moved home for a little while at the, you know, the bright age of 26. And then I got a job in New York, and then I said, okay, I'm moving to New York. And I was working in marketing. I had a desk job. I was working like 40 hours a week. And I knew that it was temporary, but like I had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew that it involved movement, but I had no idea what direction to go. And I was really kind of like a little distraught. You know, I was with a guy at the time, and he's like, well, you know, we never know what's in our future. And I'm like, yeah, that's really helpful. So I got rid of him. and I decided that I wanted to pursue dance a little bit more seriously, a little bit more dedicated in New York. And I started taking dance classes at a couple of different studios. I started making some connections and got involved with a friend's performance art piece where I danced on video and she projected the video behind a live performance. And when that live performance actually happened, I was a guest in the audience. And I remember coming back from intermission. It was at a dance studio, and I was running up the stairs to get back to my seat because I was running late, coming back from intermission. And at the top of the stairs, I almost like knocked over this sign. There was like an easel with a cardboard sign on it. I almost docked it over, and I'm pulling it back up and setting it upright, you know, trying to get back to my seat. And I noticed what I knocked over was an announcement, an invitation for a Pilates training at this dance studio. And I looked at it and I said, well, I guess it's meant to be. I guess if I've run into this sign, it's a sign. And something that, you know, I had enjoyed doing as a student for 5 years, I decided that it was time for me to take it on. And at the time, I really didn't have any idea where it would take me. I just knew I wanted to learn the system more intimately. I wanted to know my body more intimately. I wanted to get to know movement more intimately. And so I took this 100-hour Pilates mat certification and started student teaching. And all the while, I was still taking dance classes. Mm-hmm. And about a year later, when I was then working, I had my own classes, I got involved with this avant-garde dance production in Brooklyn. This is in 2006 now. And is this French-Canadian choreographer who I had seen her work previously. And when I saw her work before, I was like, I fell in love with her. And I just knew that I wanted to work with her in some capacity. Like, I had no idea what it was. But in 2006, she restaged the show that I saw in 2005.
Wow.
And I was like, I want to be in this show. And the show was really remarkable. She had a cast of 75 dancers and musicians.
Whoa.
It was staged in a 50,000 square foot empty City Parks pool in Brooklyn, New York. And between the musicians and the dancers, there were maybe 24 different vignettes in 2 acts. And the vignettes were happening simultaneously.
Oh,
you know, in the span of this giant empty pool. And the audience members would sit around the pool, or they had the option to get up and walk around the pool to another seat. And the name of the piece was called Agora. Agora 2 was the one that I was in. And the character that I played a human disco ball. And... not shocking, I know. And I made a 6-foot double-sided silver sequined cape and a silver lamé dress that I crafted the whole thing. And this pool had these 2 filtration towers. You know, it's empty. So
yeah.
These filtration towers were kind of like go-go stands, you know, almost. And that was where I did my little 5-minute disco dance. Well, other vignettes were going on and whatnot, but... And now one of the vignettes in this show was called Hoops and Whistles. And they had half of the dancers have these, you know, these whistles, like, you know, those long tubes that are kind of... not so much a whistle, but it's like a tube that if you twirl it around...
Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. It makes a sound.
Yeah.
So half the dancers got those. And the other half of the dancers were teamed up with a New York City hooper named Malcolm Stewart.
Yes!
Yes. Malcolm Stewart is my hoop daddy.
That's an impressive hoop daddy.
For sure. You know, this is back when he had long hair and groove hoops was in full effect in New York. And, you know, so he taught like 30 dancers to hoop at the waist, perform a liftoff, and a little halo overhead. Uh-huh. You know, and that's the combo that we learned. And, gosh, you know, I couldn't do it. I was really struggling with this part. And part of it was my head. I was like, I'm a dancer. I don't dance with toys. And, you know, but he encouraged me to bring a hoop home and, like, play with it on my roof. And I did. And I still had this attitude about it. But the show was really fantastic. And after the show, for about like 8 months, I would like kind of pick up the hoop and then like my head would say that line again. I'm a dancer. I don't dance with toys, you know? And then like, but I kept seeing hooping out and about, like, you know, I'm in New York and I'm going to events and, you know, I went to a Burning Man decom 1 year and I saw this phenomenal hooper just, you know, on the side of the room doing an act, and she's dressed up in this cat suit and fabulous hooper. She's now a friend of mine, Mayura. But that was it for me. I was like, okay, I really got to do this because I'm so into this. Like, I love it every time I see it. Yeah. There's got to be something to it that I'm missing. So that's about when I really dedicated to myself to it. And of course, you know what comes next. You start ordering the tubing and the tape, and you make your own hoops, and you teach your friends. And that was all happening simultaneously as my marketing job was getting so, I don't know, I just felt like my heart was being crushed. And I asked them if I could go part-time, if I could do 80% of my work and 50% of the time. They jumped at the chance because...
Pay you less.
Hey, pay me less, but still get most of the work done. And then 6 months later, they laid me off. And at that time, I was in a second Pilates training, which was a 700-hour machine certification. So my Pilates training was like coming to a head, and like my hours were increasing, and my marketing job was, you know, even the part-time was too much.
Yeah.
And right at the time, I was like, I remember this moment. I said, something's got to give. This is too much. Something's got to give. And it was within that same week, they called me into the side office and they laid me off. And my boss, you know, and I'm, you know, she could see the tears welling up, yeah, and the freak out starting to happen. And she looked at me and she like touched my arm and she said, Bex, you don't understand. We've fired 9 people this year. You're the only person we're laying off. And when you get laid off, you're eligible for unemployment benefits. And it, you know, it's not much, but like, but that just, you know, it just made me feel like, okay, that's something, you know, I'm okay. And then I recognized what a flipping blessing that was, you know, because I could complete my Pilates training while earning unemployment benefits, start looking for work, you know, and the hooping thing was kind of picking up. 2008, 2009, I think I started teaching my first workshops in 2008. I was teaching Pilates at a yoga studio, and I said, hey, this is something that I'm really passionate about doing. Would you guys have any interest in hosting a workshop for me? And they were into it. And then I guess it was workshops for about 2 years on and off. And then in 2010, I started my first class. And I thought I was going to start with one, but I had so much interest that my first round was actually two classes. Wow. And I filled those up. And I just really felt like I was onto something. And I just kept on going and going and going until I was teaching about 25 hours of Pilates a week and 4 or 5 hoop classes a week. And Whoa. Of course, going to 4 or 5 hooping events a year. And that was the life, man. It was Brooklyn, and I was working and teaching movement and doing it. It was great. The hooping, my classes, yeah.
So you're teaching the Pilates, and then you had how many classes a week?
Well, it changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
For the majority of the time that I was teaching, it was about 3 or 4 a week. Towards the end, it was 4 and 5 a week. But, you know, there was a lot of shifts that happened between 2010 and 2014, you know, the 4 years that I was really deep into teaching. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I was deep into teaching Pilates since 2006, and, you know, so just mm-hmm. things come up and change. I began studying Thai massage in 2010 and added that to my service offerings. And then, oh, God, there was just like this amazing thing. Like, in, yeah, it was like 2010 that I decided that I wanted to take performing more seriously. And so I, you know, I was getting a couple of gigs here and there, but I really, you know, I had it in my mind that I wanted to be a New York performer. I wanted to be a nightlife performer. And of course, you know, I'm getting up at like 5 and 6 a.m. to teach Pilates at 7 a.m., like 3 to 5 days a week. So I'm not, like, I didn't really have it set up to do that. But, you know, I got hired to do this gig, and they asked for a month of rehearsals unpaid to showcase this expo show. And, you know, and I could only make, I made as many of the rehearsals as I committed to, but, you know, there was, I wasn't able to give the director what she wanted, and so things kind of fell apart. I was let go of the production the day that we were supposed to showcase, and I was really upset. I was so upset. And, you know, and about a day or two later, when I kind of calmed down, I was like, you know, I don't think that that's the kind of performing that I actually want to do.
Yeah.
It really hit home that it's uncharacteristic of me to be a character that's like this sexy, slinky, nightlife vixen, you know, because I'm a flipping clown, you know? Like, I mean, I don't wear a clown nose, but like I've always felt drawn to comedy performance or levity, you know, over, you know, sex, sensual, and not that I can't do that, not that I, you know, think that there's anything wrong with that, but for me personally, that's what I'm drawn to. And so it was right around that time when I was like, F her and her thing. And I was like, I want to have a show. I want to have a dance that everybody's welcome to participate in, no matter how many rehearsals they can make. You know what? Oh, shoot. I'm getting ahead of myself. I did have that moment, but it wasn't until later. The day after I was fired from this volunteer performance, I was actually invited by a client of mine, Pilates client of mine, to do a roller derby halftime show. This is how it started. Totally.
Best audiences ever.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we had talked about it before, never aligned, and then all of a sudden, my calendar is free, so I said, yes, full body yes. And she said, okay, great, it's 10, 15 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, hell, I don't want to do a 10 or 15 minute act by myself. Like, I want to have like 3 or 4 of my girlfriends with me. So I asked around, saw who was free, and got 4 other women to participate. One girlfriend was like, oh, roller derby, that's a Gotham Girls roller, that's a pretty big deal. Like, are we just going to improv? And then, of course, I'm like, oh shit, are we just going to improv? Oh, no. Like, is it okay that I swear?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no, we can't just improv. So then I was like, well, I have to make choreography. And one of the girls suggested this song, the Florence and the Machine song, The Dog Days Are Over,
uh-huh.
That was really big. This was the year 2011. And I was like, great, that's like a 5-minute song. Now I just need like another 5 or 6 minute song to, you know, round it out. And because that song was so emotional and driving, and, you know, that's the end. Okay, what's the beginning? It's got to be punchy. It's got to be a little poppy. And I found this other song called Hello by Martin Solveig and the Dragonettes. And it's, I just came to say hello. I don't know, it's probably not going to translate, but but look it up on iTunes. It's great. And so I put the two tunes together, and, you know, the roller derby connection wrote to me, and she's like, hey, we had a cancellation. Can you guys do this weekend? And meanwhile, it's like, you know, 5 days away. And I said, sure, of course. And so now I've got this 10-minute piece of music, 2 songs to string together and make choreography for.
In 5 days.
No problem. So, you know, I'm listening to the music. The way I do choreography is I make a spreadsheet and I count out all my counts and I connect the line of the lyric to the 8 count that it corresponds to. And then I, you know, same line in the spreadsheet, I write out the direction, you know. So that's kind of how I break down my choreography. And so as I'm writing out the lyrics to these two songs, I recognize that, like, the lyrics of the first song are, I just came to the party to say hello. It doesn't really matter what you say to me. I'm just here to say hello. It was very much the story of a party girl.
Yeah.
Going to a party just to be seen.
Okay.
You know, she doesn't really care who's there or, like, you know, it doesn't really matter if you're into me. I just came to say hello. And then the second song, you know, the lyrics are, happiness hit her like a train on a track. The dog days are over. The dog days are done, you know. And I'm writing this out, and I'm kind of laughing because I'm like, well, that kind of, like, sounds like a love story. It kind of sounds like this party girl turns around and happiness hits her. The dog days are over. And she's found love. That's how I interpreted it. And I laughed because I had just broken up with this guy who was a friend. And I was like, well, that's funny. I wrote a love story and my heartache. So we did the roller derby performance. One of the girls got sick, and, you know, half of us forgot the choreography here and there. And, you know,
10 minutes, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's
a lot. Totally. For four people, you know. The crowd loved it, but it was over so fast, you know. And I was thinking, gosh, you know, I really want to do something more with this piece. Like, I spent, you know, 4 days choreographing it, and another day and a half, like, breaking it down. And I was like, you know, it'd be great to do this with, like, 8 hoopers. Or maybe, like, 12 hoopers. What would be really awesome is if we did it with, like, 50 hoopers. An infinite number of hoopers. And then it hit me that I could do this at Figment. Now, Figment is a New York City participatory arts project. It's an event that happens annually. I think 2016 will probably be its, like, 8th year in existence. And it came about when one of the New York Burning Man regionals came back from Burning Man, I think in, like, 2005 or 6. And he was just really feeling heavy about Burning Man being such an exclusive experience. And that there were so many people in our beloved New York City that weren't able to experience Burning Man, the transformational aspects of Burning Man, because of economic or social reasons. You know, it's just not available to them. So why not bring Burning Man to New York? And thus Figment was born. He petitioned the city. We got Governor's Island, which is this tiny little island that you have to take a ferry to get to. And it's this old fort. So when you get there, you're, like, transported into this different world.
Wow.
It's like you go back in time. You don't feel like you're in New York City anymore. You know, it's just rolling fields and historical buildings and sky. Like, it's just beautiful. And so I wrote up my application to enter a hula hoop dance performance at Figment 2011. And I got in, of course, and started advertising to hoopers. Come learn my choreography. I made videos, put them up on YouTube. I ran a few live rehearsals so that we could work together as a group. And all the while, as all this was happening, I had totally forgotten that I had a online dating profile on OkCupid. And I got this message from this guy. And, you know, and I'm totally not even on the market. I'm like, I just broke up with this friend. I was in the middle of this, like, 3-year mission to be single that I had set out to do. So, but I read it, you know, and he's like, I really like your spirit and your energy. And I think that more people on this planet should sparkle like you do. I'd love to get to know you better. And I was like, huh. Okay, well, that's worth investigating. That's worth a
coffee.
Exactly. Totally. So, he and I met up at the, you know, in the midst of this is like a week away from Figment. And we meet up and we realize that we know like 75 people in common. We realize that there's just so much. Let me gather my thoughts. So he just surprised me. I was not expecting to meet a quality love interest, you know? And And he at the time he was a documentary filmmaker, so our first date was just a series of questions. He interviewed me. he totally kind of interrogated me, but you know, and I'm a Leo and a performer, so of course I'm gonna love talking about myself. And you know, my Figment piece came up, and he knows Figment because we know all these right. people in common, and he asked me, he's like, "Do you have anybody filming it?" And I said, "No, I don't. Are you offering?" And he said, "Sure, why not?" First date, sight unseen, you know, and I'm like, holy hell, great, thank you. Okay, that's worth a second date, you know. On top of that, he showed me his Harley and he, you know, gave me a kiss. And it's like, okay, that's worth a second date. We went out on a second date and then we went out on a third date. And by the third date, I was like, okay, I really like this guy. I'm going to spend a fair amount of time with him, I think. And then 2 days later, it was the day of my big show on Figment. And of course, now he's part of it and he's coming there with me. And, you know, we spent the night together the night before. So we're a little late getting to the island the next day. And, you know, half my Hoopers knew what was going on and they're like, woo, girl, you know? Getting it, you know. And so, but then it was time to dance. And we, you know, we took our places and he's there with his cameras set up. And then we're dancing the piece. And of course, you know, I'm in director mode and I'm like, you know, all business. But like in the midst of the piece, when the tracks flipped over to "The dog days are over, the dog days are done, happiness hit her like a train on a track," I literally almost dropped my hoop because this wave rushed over me and I realized that I wrote my own love story. I put it together before we met in a place of heartache and loss. And what I put together was this beautiful piece. Again, like I started to say before, you know, I wanted to create this piece that was open to all sizes, all shapes, all ages, regardless of how many rehearsals you could come to. The choreography was built in such a way that rock stars could be their rock stars, beginners could access it, mm-hmm. you know? So there were lots of layers, there were lots of textures of hooping that were involved in this piece. You know, and by the end of the piece, I'm crying because I recognize...
I'm like on the verge of crying right now.
It's true. And I realized, I was like, holy fuck, like this is not just some guy that I'm going to spend a fair amount of time with. This is my person. And here he is in front of me. And here are all...
Participating with you.
Participating with me. And here are all my people that I've gathered to welcome him into my life. And the name of the piece was called Hello. You know? And I was just like, and I'm, you know, I get emotional thinking about it even still because it was just so profound the way the universe just like brings it all together and hits you over the head, you know? I mean, we discovered leading up to that dance, he actually had photos of me performing at an event 3 years before we ever spoke. And before we met, he sent me one of those photos when we were still kind of writing on OkCupid. Yeah. He sent me this photo and he's like, "Is this you?" And I almost fell off my chair. I was like, "Yes, that's me." And there's a beautiful story behind that hula hoop performance where that's a different story. I'm gonna leave that story to the imagination, but it turns out he actually had like 35 photos of me from that night, but he didn't tell me that until, you know, he didn't run the risk of being a stalker or, you right. know.
did he know it was like a process of discovery that he figured out it was you when you guys were emailing each other?
Right, when we were emailing
so
each other.
So he didn't know initially from...
He did not know initially. Wow. My OkCupid, my online dating profile was, you know, I had revamped it after I broke up with this friend who didn't have the time for me because that's how we set up the relationship. I was set out to be a single person for 3 years and he was in a PhD program. And when we got together, it was like, cool, let's have fun. Let's get to know each other. Mm-hmm. Let's enjoy each other's company. And then, you know, 3 months later, I was like, gosh, I only see you on Saturdays and this doesn't really feel like enough for me.
Yeah.
And you know, when I spoke to him about it, he was like, well, you know, this is what I have. And And I started to realize that what I wanted had changed. But that wasn't before I was like, I'm a big fucking deal. And, you know, like, lots of guys would be happy to spend more time with me, you know? Like, so I had this whole thing, you know, but then I realized it. Like, yeah, what I wanted has changed, and he's doing the very best that he can. And I love him for it. And but I did take away that mantra, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but I was like, I'm a big fucking deal. And so I abbreviate that, and I say, I'm a BFD, you know? And that's just kind of like how I proceeded, because I knew that I wanted something more. I had gone to 3 weddings that year, and I had just witnessed 3 couples coming to union, sharing divine love, what I call divine love, what others call divine love, just that soulmate relationship that there's no explanation for.
Right.
You know, there's so many coincidences, they can't be coincidences.
Yep.
You know? And that's what I felt with Nick. And that's what revealed itself to me through my dance that I created with Hula Hoops. And so because I was so high on love that year, I decided that I wanted to do the piece again, but I wanted to do it with 100 hoopers. And at the time, and this was 2011, 2012, there weren't a lot of organized group hoop events happening. I mean, there were gatherings, yeah, and festivals, but there weren't a lot of choreographed, group performances. So I set out to create a choreographed group performance for 100 hoopers. And I used the same choreography. I modified it a little bit. And I decided that if we have this group of 100 hula hoopers in circular formation, that was the nature of my choreography, dancing and twirling and moving the circle like a hurricane in a spiral formation, that we would open a portal to true love for all dancers and audience members. You know, I was just really like, this is, we're stirring it up, you know, we're opening the portal to true love. And so the next year I did it. I pulled it off. I ran a Kickstarter program, and I raised about $3,500 to fund t-shirts, water, the transportation to get the stuff to the island, the Figment Island. I paid a designer to help me with the design, the logo for the t-shirt. We paid a film crew to shoot the dance in like from 5 different angles,
oh,
and to edit it together. And then I had a friend do some graphics on the video, and I think that was just one of the most remarkable moments for me thus far in my hooping. I love being a director. I won't lie. I get to carry around a megaphone, yeah, and, you know, tell people what to do. But just to see, you know, I think the very last show that we did several of them over the course of the weekend, but the very last show, all the hoopers took their place in a circle. And I went around to each and every single hooper in that circle, not only to count how many people who showed up, because I wasn't really keeping track of, am I going to get 100? I was just letting that part go.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, if I build it, they will come. But the day, that last day, I went around, all the way around, and I counted 99 hoopers. And I thanked each and every one, looking them in the eye. And, yeah, that was really a very special time.
That's incredible.
Moment. Yeah. And that video is on my YouTube channel. It's YouTube/SenseOfMotion. You can see that video.
Good. That will be, so when I put this up, yeah, I put it in I do a little blog.
Yep.
And then I put links and video and everything that relate to this. So
excellent.
Everyone will be able to see that.
Wonderful.
So I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
So that happened.
That sure did.
And then when did you guys decide to move?
Sure. So right after that dance, that was June of 2012, in August of 2012, I hit huge health speed bump. Huge. Like, it took me out physically, it took me out emotionally, spiritually. I quit my Pilates job. And then at that time, like, teaching hooping became my full-time work. And I was teaching a little bit of, that's not completely true. I was teaching a little bit of Pilates here and there, but I was definitely relying mostly on my hooping income. And that was great. It was okay. I mean, my mental, physical state was compromised, but by January of 2013, I was kind of back up and rolling. And then in September of 2013, so like, you know, past the summer, I did another Figment dance. We had 50 hoopers. I did a new piece called All Is Love. And that was like kind of an homage to all kinds of love. Yeah. You know, the soulmate love, the unrequited love, the self-love, all of it. The friendship love. And then my man and I went to another country. He, for work, I accompanied him, and this was in South Africa. We went on safari. It was phenomenal. I saw lions. It was crazy. And then, you know, of course, on vacation, you kind of let your guard down a little bit. I'm not a big drinker, but on vacation that time, I sure was. And, you know, I found an in-ground trampoline in the lodge that we were staying out. And I was like, I've never seen an in-ground trampoline. I got to try that. You know, so I get on the trampoline and I do this crazy Olympic routine and went for my landing and did not make it. And I twisted my ankle so badly I couldn't walk on it. And, you know, through the recovery process, you know, I was in a boot. I came back to New York and thought everything will be better when I come back to New York. And I came back to New York and it was not better. I was still having mobility issues, and having mobility issues for me brings up a lot of emotion, and it brought up a lot of some residual stuff that I hadn't dealt with from the year before, and like just a lot of things were coming to a head, you know. At the same time, teaching hoop dance again was my primary mode of income, and I was having trouble teaching my classes.
With an injury.
I mean, you know, I was doing okay, but I was feeling limited, and I was feeling like I wasn't giving enough. And I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I don't know that I can fully heal in this city. And I've lived here almost 9 years, and I love it. But, you know, it was like this thing that, like, my heart knew deep inside that it was time to go. Yeah. My head didn't really fully understand why. My man was like totally agreeable to it because he was ready to leave when we met 3 years before that.
I was like, oh, okay, I gotta stay.
Yep, totally. So he stayed for a few years longer than he wanted to be with me. And when I mentioned to him, like, so how about moving? He jumped and you know, and we moved to Colorado. We decided on Colorado because I wanted to go there ages ago as an undergrad, fell in love with Boulder. He had gone there more recently for a work trip, fell in love with Boulder. Mm. So we decided, let's try out Boulder. It's different. It's something. It gets us out of New York. And anybody who lives in a high-paced, expensive urban environment knows how difficult it is to get out of that situation. Oh, yeah, and on top of that, our landlord wanted to raise our rent 30%.
Oh, there's your sign right there. Right? It's like, never mind. We are totally.
So it was just, you know, it was kind of a full body yes, even though I didn't fully understand why, you know. And so, yeah, we moved. And that was like the end of 2013. I mean, it was basically 2014. Oh, gosh. And then that year, you know, in Colorado, I was kind of like, you know, there's this great hooping community that already exists, and I don't know where I fit into it. And at the time, I was really passionate about teacher training. I was really passionate about teaching hoop dance teachers anatomy and how the body works and how hoop dance can be a functional tool to address repetitive patterns. You know, so I was really passionate about blending my Pilates knowledge with my hoop skills and teaching that. So I created an online course that is a self-guided video course with quizzes and all kinds of information about the body and and skills and challenges and, you know, for teachers. And started marketing that a little bit here and there. And at the same time, I was going back to New York every 2 months to teach.
You were still teaching.
I was still teaching in New York. My partner was flying all over the world for his job, so I would ride his miles to get to New York every 2 months and make my money. And then I'd come back to Colorado and work on my online program.
Wow.
Yeah. It was intense. But I was loving it. I'm like, I'm jet set, you know. But all the while, not embracing the reality of it, that it's not sustainable, that it's not a viable future, you know. So it was not sustainable, and I knew that I had to do something.
When you say it wasn't sustainable, just like realizing that the commute just itself going to New York is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Because like you'd have to stay with friends, or you'd get a hotel, or
I'd stay with friends.
Yeah,
but you know, like it's like how many times do you do that? And you do have plenty of friends to rotate around. But I kind of gotten to this place in my life where I enjoy a certain quality of life, and there are times when like crashing on somebody's floor just doesn't cut it for me anymore. You know, like, I don't feel like a professional.
Your couch is really uncomfortable. I don't want to be here anymore.
Right. Yeah. So I knew that something had to change, and I had to do something. And I just wasn't I wasn't sure what the next step was. And so what did I do? Well, I did what I knew what to do, which was look for work teaching movement. And it was something that I said I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be anchored to Boulder. But, you know, the thing is like any step like that is temporary. And the more that we can bear in mind that forward movement is forward movement, and we need forward movement to make change. And just because you're taking a step doesn't mean that you're like locked in or married to that step. So in that spirit, I went on Craigslist and I saw a job posting for a Pilates reformer teacher at the University of Colorado Boulder. And I said, well, I can do that. So I put in an application, got a call in my interview, and she brought me in. And my boss, she sits me down and she's like, so I'm really excited about your Pilates resume, but what I really want to hear about is the hoop dance. Right? Which is exactly what I wanted. I was going to mention it. I was going to bring it up, but she did her research. She was all up in my YouTube page, and she was just like, what I see in your videos is what I want here at the university. I want a space for kids who don't feel like they fit into other group exercise classes to come and feel like they belong. And I was like, that, my dear, is what I am all about. You know? And so, you know, she offered me a job, and I started teaching a couple of classes there. And, you know, it was just like maybe two or three classes a week. But it was enough to keep me grounded in Boulder. So now all of a sudden, my man is like, hey, I'm going to New York in a month. Do you want to come with me? You know, and I was like, yeah, oh, no, I can't. I have to stay here and work. And at the same time, it wasn't quite enough money. It wasn't nearly enough money to sustain me. So now I'm in this position of, okay, well, I've got to stay in town.
Right.
But I'm not making enough money. Okay, so now what? So I was like, all right, well, I'll do what I know. I know how to run classes. So I rented studio space, and I started, you know, reaching out to some people who had indicated interested in hoop dance, and put a six-week beginner series on the calendar. And I had two people come. And one night I had three people come, you know? But I had two people coming. And like about halfway through this series, I was driving home, and part of me is thinking, like, don't they know who I am? I sell out classes in New York. I run 100-person hoop dances. You know, but then the other part of me is like, you know, this is a local business. And I'm in a new locale. And, like, if I want this to succeed, I've got to hit the ground and do my work and promote. And it could take me 2 years to build
it back up.
To build it back up, you know? And would I experience the same kind of success that I had in New York? And I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I don't think I want that. And then it got clearer, and I said, I definitely don't want that, you know? And it was like, you know, so then I started having this breakdown where I was like, God, if I'm not New York City and if I'm not Hula Hoops, what the heck am I, you know? And it was just this moment, this super humbling moment of ego release and humility and just being like, okay, universe, fill me. You know, use me, guide me. I need you. Not that I felt like I was done teaching movement, but I just felt like there was something more for me to do. And it came to me very quickly, like this thing had been brewing, you know, because Hula Hoops brought me true love and I have this divine soulmate relationship with my man. He and I would lead talks on the East Coast at festivals about conscious communication, being with a strong partner and, love talks. And this is something that we had been doing for a couple of years. And so I was like, gosh, I think there might be something more to this love piece. And I decided that I could still be a movement teacher, but I could also expand my practice and teach women about true love. And so I signed up with a business coach because I knew, like, this is totally different. You know, this is a whole different field. And I want to be able to do this right. And I want to make an impact quickly, you know. And I want to start making money quickly, too. So I signed up with this business coach that I couldn't afford. And I just knew that it was the right step. And the day after I signed the contract to work with her, the money came, wouldn't you know. I got a referral from the university to, you know, to work with these people in Boulder in their home. And, you know, they met me and she's like, would you come 3 days a week? And my eyes got really big and I'm like, I will come 8 days a week, if you know, because anybody who knows practice, like, you know, you make a whole heck of a lot more in your private practice and in home than you do like at a studio or,
yeah.
So, and then all of a sudden the money for my coaching was there.
It's amazing how that works out.
But
it does, you do have to allow that though.
It's true.
It's amazing that, yeah.
Yeah. I was just speaking with a woman here about that, about how, you know, there are moments in our life where the way I see it is that we're peering over a cliff, and it's this cliff, it's a decision, you know, and nowhere in sight is the safety net. We have no flipping idea what happens next. And if we stay there on the cliff, nothing changes.
Right.
But if you jump, you're guaranteed change. Right? But more often than not, I feel, I know, I witness, I experience that the universe rises to meet us. That once we jump, then the net appears. Like, I believe that the universe needs action on our part to meet us with the safety net. You know, meet us with the answers. And that's why, you know, when we're so paralyzed with decision and we, you know, we're standing on that cliff and we're paralyzed, immobile, nothing happens. You know, and a lot of people say, well, I'm waiting for this to happen, or, you know, I'm waiting, maybe I'm just going to wait till I have more money, or I'm going to wait until, but it, the longer you wait, the more nothing changes.
Yeah.
You know? So I took the leap, the money came, and now I'm talking more and more about love in a coaching setting. I still teach Pilates. I still teach hoop dance. And the beautiful thing that's happened just recently, I've just realized it right before hoop camp, is that the income that I'm earning from coaching has shifted me into a position where hoop dance now, teaching hoop dance, is an optional thing for me again. I no longer rely on it solely for my income. And for me, I think that's the right choice. You know, it wasn't an issue when I had to do it, but for an extended period of time, you know, that relationship changes. You know, I think that's true for any art or creative passion. Once you make that your full-time job, your income, it changes the relationship.
It does.
And there's no judgment on that, because for some people it's fantastic. For other people it doesn't work out quite as well. You know, so I think anybody who's interested in pursuing a full-time performing career, a full-time teaching career, to just be aware of that, you know, and to check in with themselves every few months and say, am I still full-body yesing to this choice? You know, is this still, you know, and it changes and it evolves. So I think a continuous check-in is really important.
I think
in
you're
that
right.
Respect.
Definitely right on that one. So what is, so you're moving into more of the love coaching,
mm-hmm.
but you still get to do the things that you do enjoy teaching others too, with the Pilates and the hooping.
Absolutely.
And so that's like a very rounded,
yeah.
Like you've got your triad of, you know, you do things that you love to do for other people, but you're like getting,
yeah,
like just enough like back.
Yeah. And what I see moving forward is I really see movement being part of the love coaching. For me, movement was the key that unlocked the door of self-love and self-acceptance for me. You know, I got to a point where, you know, I knew I didn't want to be a sexy, sensual nightclub performer. I accepted the fact that I bring lots of joy and humor to performance. And I accept the fact that my thighs touch and I'm never going to be 6'2 and all legs. Like, I accept those things about myself. And I love that I'm unique and different and nobody else can do me except me. And movement brought me that. Hula hoops brought me that. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's the gateway for everybody, but I think that it's a very powerful gateway that I want to incorporate and teach other women, bring them through that gateway towards self-love so that they can have the capacity for that lasting relationship. You know, because if we don't have that foundation, I will quote one of my favorite drag queens, Latrice Royale. She says, if you're not right, she was like, what did she say? If you ain't right with yourself, how in the hell are you going to be right for anybody else? Oh, well, RuPaul says that too. But if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Can I get an amen? So that's what RuPaul says. Latrice Royale had something else about if you're not straight in your heart, you know. And I think that being straight in your heart for me means that there's peace there. You know, that the internal dialogue has been dialed down a little bit. And, you know, what's dialed up for you is the trust that you're doing the right thing, even if it doesn't feel like it, you know, like following that intuition. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay, good, because I feel like I might be going off a little.
No, I see you're kind of working it out yourself.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I agree, because I wouldn't say we're taught to ignore intuition, but we're definitely not encouraged to pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, and the gut feeling,
right.
feeling. And
right.
it's like, you know, it's there.
Right.
But
we're taught to be so cerebral and think and, you know, and like, great. Our thinker does such a great job for us. But I think, I know that where we find bliss and where we find satisfaction is not through our thoughts. You know, it's not through thought-driven action. It's through feeling-driven action.
I agree. I think your thinker, like you say, mm-hmm. can talk you out of what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, that can't be right, because that's not what you're supposed to do.
Right.
That's not what your parents want you to do. That's not what your partner wants you to do.
Right.
That's like, mm-hmm. so... Yeah, I appreciate what you're talking about, because it's really starting to hit some very, it's like I knew I needed to talk to you. I didn't know why. I just knew I needed to talk to you at Hoop Camp.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. And I'll get all that information up there, because I want to see this video. Oh, and that your man proposed to you.
Yes.
on one of the, so how was that? Was that another one that you choreographed?
Yes.
And he just snuck in and.
Well, here's the beauty of it, is that in, like, this the winter, the springtime is usually when I start thinking about the project because the event is in June. And I'm living in Colorado. And I'm like, you know, so, and this is the year that I was going back every 2 months to teach. And I was back in March to teach a series of workshops. And I just put it out to my peeps. I was like, so guys, I'm kind of kicking around doing another Figment, but you know, I live in Colorado, so it'd be a little logistical organization, but would any of you be really interested in doing another one? I know we've done three already, and everyone was like, please do it, please do it, please do it. So I was like, I have no other choice. Okay. So I went back to Colorado and picked out my music and put the music together and worked on my choreography and made videos, sent the videos to my dance captains in New York who ran rehearsals for me. They would send me videos of rehearsals, and I would send them back notes. I flew into New York a week early to run live rehearsals, and then it was showtime. And, you know, I riding, like, Nick could only be there that one day. We had 2 days of performances. And riding over on the ferry with him that morning and just feeling just so, like, wowed that, you know, this is the fourth production, and I was able to pull it off from 2,500 miles away. And you know, so we're on the field and the music starts, we're doing our dance, and, you know, and we only had a few live rehearsals and not everybody was there. So by the ending, the finale was a little complex. And when we finished, my director head was on and, you know, we're taking our bows and I'm thinking, okay, we got to change this. We got to change this. I got to tell them this. And then all of a sudden I noticed that my hoopers have formed a circle around me. And they lifted their hoops up over me in, like, this canopy. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, when we did the 100-person hoop dance, they dropped all their, they made a hoop tunnel over me. And I'm thinking, oh, they're doing that again. And I was like, okay, watch the hair, watch my hat, you know. But no, they just held the hoops over me. And I was like, what's going on? And then I heard the music change. And the music was, the dog days are over. The dog days are done. It was a remix, actually, that Nick spent hours looking for, and he found this remix by one of my favorite DJs, Pumpkin. And so that, in and of itself, was special. And then the circle opens, and he comes walking towards me with a bouquet of white roses, and he comes up to me, and he gets on one knee, and he pulls out this ring, and he said, "Would you make me the happiest man alive and spend the rest of your life with me?" And I said, duh, because that's what I said.
Did you really?
I did. That's my emphatic yes, duh. And then I said yes. And then, you know, everybody's in tears at this point, including me.
Including me right now.
And then my girlfriend from Boston jumps out, and she hands me this bottle of champagne. And, like, it was just amazing.
So how did he pull that off?
He is remarkable. He knows some of my hoop students, and he got in touch with one of my dance captains, and she had the email list for all my dancers, and she emailed them all. All 60 of these dancers knew.
We're in on it.
And none of them told me.
Wow.
I had no idea. And of course, you know, it's like the fourth year that I've done this big production. So of course we've got, like, you know, 4 video cameras and 6 photographers, and, you know, and it's an event where our entire New York arts community is together in one place. And so, you know, and I'm just so overwhelmed by all of it. And I look around and there's all my favorite people, and it was just like, oh, overwhelming and joyful and blissful. And, and then what was really cute, I gotta just round this out, was, you know, afterwards we went back to the hotel where we were staying, and he's like, I gotta play you this song because I don't think you really heard the remix, because he was so excited about the remix that he found. And so he's playing it for me, and I'm like, oh, this is a really good remix. And then I hear this line in the song, you know, and I've been hearing this song for like 4 or 5 years at this point. And the line that really stuck out to me was, can you hear the horses? Because here they come. And I'm like, babe, can you hear the horses? Here they come. That's us. We were both born in the year of the horse. And I was just like, I can't believe I never put that together before. And I was like, this song is about us. So, but yeah, that's how he came to propose to me. And of course, that video is up on YouTube. We have two versions of it. We have the extended version that features the hoop dance and all the performers and everything. We also have the 2.5 minute supercut.
I posted that on my hoop biz thing. It's like, come on guys, this is the best thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you for sharing
absolutely
all of this with me. I'm feeling pretty, I have so many things that I feel connected with you with. So, thank you. And, again, thank you.
Thank you, Paige. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been wonderful. Okay.
Okay, what did I tell you? So are you in love with her? You have to be. So that was the amazing Bex Burton. I have links on the blog, hoopanista.com, so that you can, you know, go see all her incredible work. I mean, she so amazing, so inspirational. And I think she basically unstuck me. I've been kind of stuck for about a year emotionally and physically. And I think she has popped that cork, man. So I feel some transitioning happening. So she knows what she's doing. Thanks for listening to the podcast. The next one will be Baxter. I actually got to take a workshop with him. Another thing that I absolutely needed. So happy hooping, everybody. Thanks again. Bye-bye.